The dog didn't flinch as I pushed the needle into his rein, and as the Nembutal flowed, his head began to slump against Helen's arm, and his supporting paw to slide along the smooth top of the table. Soon he was stretched unconscious on his side. I held the needle in the vein as I looked down at the sleeping animal. I might have to give him a bit more. They have to be pretty deep to overcome the muscular resistance. Another cc and Dan was as limp as any rag doll. I took hold of the affected leg and spoke across the table. I want you to link your hands underneath his thigh and try to hold him there when I pull. Okay. Here we go then. It takes a surprising amount of force to pull the head of a displaced femur over the rim of the acetabulum. I kept up a steady traction with my right hand, pressing on the head part of the femur at the same time with my left. Helen did her part efficiently, leaning back against the pull, her lips pushed forward in a little pout of concentration. I suppose there must be a foolproof way of doing this job, a method which works the very first time. I have never been able to find it. Success has always come to me only after a fairly long period of trial and error, and it was the same today. I tried all sorts of angles, rotations, and twists on the flaccid limb, trying not to think of how it would look if this just happened to be the one I couldn't put back. I was wondering what Helen, still hanging on determinedly to her end, must be thinking of this wrestling match when I heard the muffled click. It was a sweet and welcome sound. I flexed the hip joint once or twice. No resistance at all now. The femoral head was once more riding smoothly in its socket. Well, that's it, I said. Hope it stays put. We'll have to keep our fingers crossed. The odd one does pop out again, but I've got a feeling this one's going to be all right. Helen ran her hand over the silky ears and neck of the sleeping dog. Poor old Dan. He wouldn't have jumped over that wall this morning if he'd known what was in store for him. How long will it be before he comes round? Oh, well, he'll be out for the rest of the day. When he starts to wake up tonight, I want you to be around to steady him in case he falls and puts the thing out again. Perhaps you'd give me a ring. I'd like to know how things are. I gathered Dan up in my arms, and I was carrying him along the passage, staggering under his weight, when I met Mrs. Hall. She was carrying a tray with two cups. "I was just having a drink of tea, Mr. Herriot," she said. "I thought you and the young lady might fancy a cup." I looked at her narrowly. This was unusual. Was it possible she'd joined Tristan in playing Cupid? But the broad, dark-skinned face was as unemotional as ever. It told me nothing. "Well, thanks very much, Mrs. Hall. I'll just put this dog outside first." I went out and settled down on the back seat of Helen's car. With only his eyes and nose sticking out from under a blanket, he looked at peace with the world. Helen was already sitting with a cup in her lap, and I thought of the other time I'd drunk tea in this room with a girl, on the day I had arrived in Derby. She had been one of Siegfried's followers and surely the toughest of them all. This was a lot different. During the struggle in the operating room, I had been able to observe Helen at close range, and I had discovered that her mouth turned up markedly at the corners, as though she was just going to smile, or had just been smiling. Also that the deep, warm blue of the eyes under the smoothly arching brows made a dizzying partnership with the rich, black brown of her hair. And this time, the conversation didn't lag. Maybe it was because I was on my own ground. Perhaps I never really felt at ease unless there was a sick animal involved somewhere. But at any rate, I found myself prattling effortlessly just as I had done up on that hill when we'd first met. Mrs. Hall's teapot was empty and the last of the biscuits gone before I finally saw Helen off and started on my round. The same feeling of easy confidence was on me that night when I heard her voice on the phone. "Dan is up and walking about," she said. "He's still a bit wobbly, but he's perfectly sound on that leg." "Oh, that's great. He's got the first stage over. I think everything's going to be fine." There was a pause at the other end of the line. Then, "Thank you so much for what you've done. We were terribly worried about him, especially my young brother and sister. We're very grateful." "Not at all. I'm delighted too. He's a grand dog." I hesitated for a moment. It had to be now. "Oh, you remember we were talking about Scotland today? Well, I was passing the plaza this afternoon, and I see they're showing a film about the Hebrides. I thought maybe, I wondered if perhaps, well, you might like to come and see it with me. Another pause, and my heart did a quick thud-thud. All right, Helen said. Yes, I'd like that. When? Friday night. Well, thank you. Goodbye till then. I replaced the receiver with a trembling hand. Why did I make such heavy weather of these things? But it didn't matter. I was back in business.